I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is 6:01 on January 19th, 2021. This is the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills working session. And this meeting is being held electronically pursuant to Utah Code 524-2074 and Mayor Reese's December 28, 2020 written determination that conducting an electronic meeting with an anchor location presents a substantial risk to the health and safety of those who may be present at the anchor location. All right. We have two agenda items. The first one, we've got a presentation on voting options related to the municipal alternate voting methods pilot project. David Buck, are you're presenting? All right, welcome, David. Thank you for joining us. Go ahead and turn the time over so you can do your presentation.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you today about something that I'm incredibly passionate about. I'm not typically a very active person politically, except for, you know, outside of voting, but this is something that I'm passionate enough to change that. So again, thank you very much for allowing me to speak to you. So I'm with a group of other Utah residents. We're calling ourselves Utah Approves. We're just a grassroots group of people who are seeking to implement better elections, first in our state and hopefully to grow that even further. Next slide. So I've been a student of voting theory for a number of years, and I've always kind of thought of it as a pipe dream, you know, a fantasy that we'd be able to have something better than what we have just because of the difficulty of changing our voting system. So I never expected much to happen, but Stan Lockhart and the Utah Ranked Choice Voting Organization, that conversation is going on today in our state. It's an incredible opportunity we have to improve the way our governments work.
Chandler, it looks like we lost the slide. There we go. Sorry, David, just one moment. I'll get Chandler back.
It's all right.
That's a inherent problem with Zoom and network connectivity. It happens. So while we're waiting to get him back, first question I've got for you is, are you working directly with the ranked choice voting folks, or are you a different effort?
No, we're a completely different effort.
Okay. Looks like we got Chandler back. Are you able to give us a quick overview without the slide presentation?
Absolutely, yeah. I'll do what I can.
We do have a copy of the slides, it looks like, in our packet, so we can view that, but just separately.
Okay. Well, I'll try and call out the slide numbers to you. Numbered be enough. Okay, so if we look at the third slide, what is this all about? Leadership is legitimized by faith. And that's true of all our organizations, our families, businesses, and especially of our government. So we need to, two things, trust who is put in power, and two, the process by which that person was put in power. And if we have faith in one, in his or trust in one, then it also erodes the trust in the other. We've seen there's an article snippet from the recent news for our country for you to know that that exists here as well. And even recently, on December 1st, UtahPolicy.com published a study that showed that up to 46% of voters feel that our state legislature has problems listening to voters. So even at the state level, we're starting to see the cracks in the faith in our government. So we have a huge opportunity here by changing our voting system to anneal those cracks and to who we trust in our elected officials. So why would I be speaking to you about this if the problem is at a more broad level? Great change within our society. And changing our voting system isn't a silver bullet solution. There are a lot of problems, but we still can do some good. Okay, if you look at slide 4, we can see a little explanation of one of the methods we're proposing. It's called approval voting. At the top of the slide, you see a sample ballot. It looks a lot like what we're used to, just one bubble next to each candidate's name. The only difference really from our traditional voting system, plurality voting, is that we remove the limit of only one vote. So you can vote for as many people as you feel would represent you in that position. Okay? And then it's just simple addition mathematics. Whoever gets the most votes is elected into that position. And slide 5, why is approval voting so great? Why would I get behind approval? It's because the winner maximizes the voters who are represented. And that's really what government should be. It should be seeking to represent as many people as they possibly can. And another way to say that is that it minimizes the people who are unrepresented. So as an example, if you went to a movie with 4 of your friends, what would you choose to go and see? Well, you'd have 2 requirements. One is that you could get 5 tickets so everyone could go, and 2 is everyone should be okay with it, or as many people as possible should be okay with it. You'd never go to one with 3 tickets because some of you like that one even better and exclude two of the people you can't with. The next point is that it encourages good candidates to enter the race. So there's no punishment through the spoiler effect. Each choice is independent of any other choice. So you can't steal any votes from someone by entering the race. So when we have an election with a lot of good people, a lot of good choices, that's a good problem to have. We can choose the best out of many good options, but we'll have good representation within our government. So slide 6. There's already an effort to improve our elections with ranked choice voting. I feel like I have to address something in the back of your minds. Why wouldn't I just get behind ranked choice if it's so popular? Well, no voting method is perfect. perfect, and Grain Choice is certainly no exception. I wanted to go through a series of explorations of the ranked choice voting algorithm with you. First, we're going to try to establish what our expectations for the set of candidates. That's one decided, you know, there's no way I'm going to win this race. I'm going to drop out. What would happen? Would we expect the race, the result to change at all? On slide 8, election scientists have a formal definition of this. They call this the independence of irrelevant alternatives. It's more commonly known as the spoiler effect to most people. So essentially, if someone who has no chance of, we're on slide 8, so if A was going to win among the set of 4 candidates, if one dropped out, it shouldn't change from A to B or C. And additionally, if one decided to join the race, it shouldn't change to B, C, or D. It could, if E was way more popular than A, change the result to E. So if we look at slide 9 of a ranked choice voting election with 2 different scenarios, what we have here is on the columns you have voters' ballots, and each row is their choice from top to bottom, first choice, second, third, fourth. So in scenario 1, we see the winner is dark blue or dark green, depending on what your monitor shows you. and if we go to scenario 2, the one difference between those is that we've removed red. So all the relative rankings between all the candidates are exactly the same, but that changes the result from the dark blue to the light blue. So there's a common misconception among proponents of ranked choice that it completely eliminates the spoiler effect, but that is actually not correct. It is less susceptible than our current voting, but it still is quite common. So slide 10, the answer, RCB's answer to that question is it depends. D may have been spoiling the election for one of the other 2 candidates. Okay. Question 11. Slide 11, excuse me. Question. Which ballot is better for candidate A? If you were a candidate, which would you hope that voters cast, ballot 1 or ballot 2? Okay, this seems pretty obvious. You'd want to be first on someone's ranked choice ballot rather than second. So you'd prefer that voters cast ballot A over ballot, or ballot 2, 1, excuse me, over ballot 2. Okay, so slide 2, election scientists have formalized this as the favorite betrayal criterion. Essentially, if my preferences are 1A, 2B, 3C, then that's how I should cast my ballot in order to get my best result, most favorable for myself as a voter. Okay, so slide 13, We have another sample election with the same setup as before. The difference is highlighted by that rectangle that we have voters change from an ABC vote to a BAC vote. So in the first scenario, what we see is that light blue or C will end up winning that election. However, if voters change their ballot to, those two voters change their ballot to BAC, then we completely flip the winner to A. So in other words, it was much more favorable for those two voters to not vote their favorite. They get a much more favorable result from that. Okay, there's something else going on with this. If we switch to slide 14, it's what is formalized as the monotonicity criteria. Essentially, if we have one election, run the result, and then we make a mutation on those ballots by swapping A and B when they're right next to each other. So you can make favorable for candidate B or disfavorable for candidate A, that voters will perhaps switch those places no matter where they are. They could be 3 and 4, 1 and 2, whatever. So what we've done is we've taken votes away from A and given them to B. Okay, what would we expect to happen to the results? How would they change? Well, there's a lot of things that can happen that are perfectly fine and fair, but what I'd highlight is the third column from the left. If B were winning or C were winning and we took votes away from A, we would never expect them to end up winning. How could you take votes away from them and then they suddenly win? Okay, so we'll go back to this same scenario that we looked at for favorite betrayal on slide 15. What we see is Sherner's had A ranked first, A did not win, and when they moved them down to their second place, then A did end up winning. Even though we're taking votes away from candidate A, we're giving them the election as a result of that, with only those two differences. Okay, that's fine. Go to slide 16. Okay, so putting this another way, if we were to graph a candidate's success in the election based on the number of votes they get against those votes, what we'd expect is something like this green line. So the more votes they get, the more successful they'd be. At some point, they cross that win threshold, red dotted line. They're elected. If they get any extra votes, that doesn't change the result. They're still more successful. They still win. What we can sometimes see in a ranked choice election is that as voters give their votes to a candidate, as the candidate accumulates votes, they increase in their success. They end up passing that threshold to win. But then as they accumulate more, they can actually go back down below that threshold so that they have there's this weird area where there's too many votes to win. And if they continue to get more votes, then of course they could win in a landslide election. But there's this odd region where more votes or less votes would have given them the election. But as they are right here, they've lost. Okay. So this is kind of like turning your steering wheel to the left and your car veers off to the right. It completely is backwards from what we'd expect. So slide 17, which ballot is better for Canada Day? It really depends, because the algorithm of ranked choice voting can be very unpredictable. Okay, slide 18. if these are my preferences, is it better for me to vote or to abstain from the election? It makes sense that having my voice heard is the only way to have my chance at affecting the election. In slide 19, voting scientists call this the participation criterion. Essentially, if we have an election and run the result, and then we add additional ballots, we'd run that same election but with some extra ballots, what would we expect to change? If it were unchanged, that's fine. If it got better for the block of people who had their ballots considered, that would be fine. But if it somehow got worse for them, well, that just doesn't seem to make any sense. That's counterintuitive to how voting works, right? We go to slide 20. We can look again at a sample election, a scenario one where we run an election without a block of votes, and then scenario two, we add those votes in. What we see is the winner starts with candidate B. When we consider those votes, it goes to candidate C. For those voters, that's going from their second choice to their third choice. So in essence, by participating in the election, they've just made the result worse for themselves. Would have been better for them to stay home. Slide 21. So ranked choice voting's answer to this is, again, it depends. It can be very unpredictable. So these aren't all the problems with ranked choice, but they're some of the more troublesome. Slide 22. In 2009, Burlington, Vermont used ranked choice for their mayor race. I don't think I have to go over the minutiae of the vote counting here. I'll just say that in this election, we see all four of these problems, all four of these things happened in that one election. So there's this notion from ranked choice voting proponents that you can vote your first choice even if they're not popular, and it's okay because if they can't win, then it just cascades down your list to your next favorite, and then they're given their best chance, and it goes further down your list until you get a choice, your top choice, that is viable. That's not really the case. Withdrawing support from a viable candidate can actually hurt that candidate so that they're eliminated in earlier rounds, and the result is heavily dependent on the elimination order of those candidates. Okay, so some of these really violate basic voter intuition on what it means to vote. If I vote my favorite, you know, if I vote, then it should help my favorite candidate. And if I vote for a candidate, it should help them. But in some cases, that's really not the case. So our elections could use help, but I just feel like ranked choice actually hurts that cause. On slide 23, is it possible to make some tweaks to fix the ranked choice algorithm? So in a Salt Lake Tribune article about one of the bills to expand ranked choice in this state for state primary elections, one of the sponsors, Senator Bramble, mentioned that there was some problem where if a candidate didn't get very many first place votes but was almost unanimous second place, they could be eliminated in an early round. Essentially, he discovered the spoiler effect in ranked choice, and he said he was trying to fix it. So they're exploring their options. There's also a group in Oregon who's pushing ranked choice, and they've made a few adjustments too. So there's this feeling that maybe ranked choice isn't really optimal. There's probably some changes we can make to it. So I have a proposal too. I'm not going to go through the minutia of this actually, so we'll skip ahead a few slides. We'll just say that incrementally, we'll go to slide 27. We can make these incremental improvements to address each one of these issues, and essentially we just end up back at approval voting based on the changes that I propose. So approval voting completely fixes the spoiler effect because of independent choices for each candidate. It helps candidates when you vote for them, and it doesn't reward attrition voting. You actually have to vote to help your candidate. Slide 28. One of the great features of approval voting is that you get an accurate representation of who supports you. So even if you don't win, you know, you could, each candidate has a possibility of getting up to 100% vote. So if you consider a candidate winning with 68%, a really strong supported candidate, and a loser who got just below that at 64%, say, you know, that sends a signal to that candidate, hey, you're really well liked. Perhaps you can consider running for another office. In other voting systems where we are forced to make that opportunity cost choice of who do we support, then the support for the losing candidate may look artificially low. So if one of those candidates was really well liked over the other, it could, you know, look as low as only a few percent, 10% for the loser, even though they're really, really well liked. Additionally, if we have a winner with a really low percentage approval, that signals to other people, maybe you should consider running. If you thought about it and ended up deciding not to run, well, we don't have a very good candidate pool, so please consider running. With that slide, you can also see different ways to express your vote. There's a standout, you can just vote for one, but you wanted to vote against, you can vote for all but one. And one of the things that's especially attractive to me is not approving of any. If there's a slate of bad candidates, we can completely still make our voice heard that we do not like any of them. Okay. Slide 29. Because the change to approval voting is so simple, it's actually backwards compatible with plurality voting. So it's very easy to transition from a plurality system, our current system, into an approval voting system. So as an example, so we could run an approval voting in one precinct in a citywide election and have all other precincts still be in plurality, and we could combine those results together and still get a correct and accurate election. So that basically you could have one precinct be testing out a new method rather than putting all your eggs in one basket and praying that everything goes well. Another way to look at that is that it has the same interface. So if we somehow fail to get the message out to some of the voters, despite our best efforts, they wouldn't come into the voting booth on election day and be totally confused and unable to vote. If they had no clue that it was going on, it'd still look like a traditional ballot. They just vote for one and it would still be valid. So there's a very, very low cost to using an approval voting system. Slide 30. So I don't think it's very fair to sit here on and kind of rail on ranked choice voting and not talk about the problems with approval voting. So I, out of fairness, I'll talk about what critics of approval voting say that is its downside. So people feel that if there are two choices that you like, but you favor one over the other, to maximize the chances of your favorite, that you would only vote for one of your candidates. That's called bullet voting. I've heard a lot of arguments that I think are quite exaggerated. I don't feel that they have merit, but there's the information. Okay. Slide 31. Perfect use case for approval is primary elections. So the goal of a primary is to choose someone who's going to do well in the next election. So winners should have strong support, and we're looking for a long-term win. Well, approval is very accurate at measuring the support, as we talked about a few slides ago. And because it's a long-term win, the strategy is no longer the same, so we can eliminate bullet voting. So basically, there's no downside to using it as a primary method. Note that it's very good at bypassing primary altogether. So we could just run this for financial reasons, run an election without a primary, and it's still incredibly accurate. Okay. So slide 32. Just a reminder of the recent presidential primaries that we've had in the 2020 Democratic and the 2016 Republican. They had a huge field, and that was winnowed down by a mere 3-4% of all primary voters. And that's not adjusted for people who would have participated but didn't show up. So there's been polling that suggests that results may have been different, or at least people who drop out early because they have, or may have gutted it out a little longer, because while they're not winning the states, they still have strong support in those states that they're not winning. So we could have incredibly different results. Okay, slide 33. So far I've kind of shown some anecdotal evidence, just a few examples, but that doesn't make a make or break a method. So it'd be nice to have some aggregate data. So we'll look at some tools for measuring overall performance of these methods. On slide 34, in 2005, a man by the name of Kaping Yi came up with a way to kind of map a winner of an election. So what happens is we have a two-dimensional issue space, and we put candidates that are represented by these colored dots in this 2D space based on their positions on those two issues. And it could be any two issues whatsoever. It's just completely arbitrary. Then we run an election for each point on that entire map as if the voters were sitting there. Okay. Without getting too much into detail, I can just tell you what you should expect to see from such a map. So on the right, what we'd see is this is what mathematicians call a Voronoi diagram. So each dot should be on its own color. If voters were right aligned with one candidate, then that candidate should win, right? Shouldn't be some other candidate if the voters are perfectly aligned with that candidate. The boundary between the two candidates should be halfway between those candidates and perpendicular. So it's a perpendicular bisector. So on slide 35, we see five example elections. So there's five sets of candidates, and then we run those maps for the three different methods: plurality, ranked choice, and approval. So immediately in column one, we see that plurality and ranked choice, the red candidate there has no chance to win whatsoever. So it's important to note that this map has no notion of main party, third party, or likability, or any of the intangibles. It bases this purely on the relative position between voters and candidates. And we see in many of the elections, many of the maps, that that's a problem with plurality, that there is some central candidate who cannot win, or their space is greatly reduced. They're certainly not winning, even if the voters are perfectly aligned with that candidate. In ranked choice, we get a little bit of correction, but it's such a patchy and bizarre manner that we see these odd shapes. Okay, so if we were to look at, for example, in column three under ranked choice, we have this kind of bizarre shape with a lot of concavity. If we were to center voters in one of those bottom forks of that purple shape and start shifting them over to the right, what we'd see is that ranked choice would first say, based on voter positions, purple is the great candidate. We'll elect purple. As we go to the right, oh no, purple's not a good candidate anymore. Green's the best candidate. As we go further to the right, well, green's not good anymore. Now purple's good again. So the concavity there shows you that, you know, it doesn't make sense to shift voters across in one direction and have one candidate be good, then bad, then good again. So there's certainly some bizarre behavior in these maps. So this is one of the strongest tools for evaluating a method. It takes a long to really understand what information you're given there. But the bottom line is that there are some major problems with both the traditional method that we use and ranked choice, and they're not rare events either. They happen quite frequently. In terms of approval, it is very well behaved. So we see that every candidate wins when the voters are centered with them, and the boundaries are about halfway between the two candidates. So we give voters the real voice in who should win, rather than the method we are using to tabulate those votes. On slide 36, we see some other computer simulations. Simulations you kind of have to take with a grain of salt, but what they show is that the satisfaction of voters is a little bit higher with approval voting than instant runoff, and certainly more than what we currently use in plurality. On slide 37, okay, so let's look at support among people who understand all this information, have had a chance to digest it. On slide 38, here's one example of a support from political scientists, experts who know this information. So basically, this was a conference that was held by the London School of Economics and Political Science. And at that conference, they decided they'd vote on a bunch of voting methods to see what was the best. So out of all the methods they chose to evaluate, approval voting got 68% support among those experts, which was the first. Ranked choice actually did fare pretty well with 45%, and that was the second most. And our current system got absolutely no support from our experts. Slide 39. This is some survey data that has come from some online communities of not necessarily experts, but people who are in favor of voting reform. And so they've studying voting theory a little bit more. They have a slight enrichment in this kind of information. Okay? So on the top, one survey asked, how would you support these voting methods if they were going to be considered in your area? I've had to editorialize these responses a little bit just for space, but essentially it broke down to three choices for favorable with different strengths, some choices for unfavorable, and a few indifferences. What we see from approval is that it's got very strong support with 84% positive and about 50% very strongly favorable. From ranked choice, it's still faring pretty well. It's got 56% positive, but it's also got considerable unfavorable responses. On the bottom, there's another one that was asked, respondents were asked to vote on the voting methods. And that was a score ballot, so ranked them from 0 to 5. Approval averaged 3.4 out of 5, ranked choice averaged 2.3 out of 5. And among the respondents, 60% rated approval higher than ranked choice. Okay, on slide 40, we have a summary of the comparison of voting methods. Essentially, in terms of accuracy, our current system can be pretty low. Voters understand that, and that's why they vote strategically. We do improve that a little bit with ranked choice, but there's a lot left to be desired. Approval is really well behaved and gives high accuracy. It's important that our voting method leave it up to the voters to decide who should be their representative and not leave some of that to the will of the voting method. So that's very important. In terms of transparency, approval and plurality are very high. It's just simple addition. Ranked choice can be incredibly opaque. It's really hard to understand exactly why the person who was elected was elected. From expert support, I get very strong support for approval. From strategy's perspective, our current system is very high. Ranked choice and approval do have some incentive to vote strategically because that's true of every voting method. And for simulated satisfaction, this is relative. Our current system does pretty low. Ranked choice does improve it a little bit, and approval is high. So if we look at the best feature for each of these, we probably say plurality is our tradition. It's very convenient just to stay where we're at. Ranked choice has some momentum, but it has so many problems, it's hard to say that there's something really more than that that we should get behind it. And in terms of approval, accuracy and inclusiveness. Slide 41, takeaways. So our current system definitely has problems, and they're more apparent at higher levels of government, like federal government. It really does give an inaccurate reflection of voters' true preferences, and it's biased towards extreme candidates, which leads to polarization. Ranked choice does improve it slightly, but not enough to really say that, you know, if we're going to change our voting system, we should think about it, we should do it right, we shouldn't be excited about something and go ahead and pull the trigger just because it's the first thing that came along. The problems with ranked choice means that we need to keep going forward, not abandon and go backward. And approval voting is really a great option. It's inclusive. It represents as many people as we can possibly have, and it's an accurate representation of voters' preferences. So, last slide. Thank you for listening to my presentation. Really love to have your support in telling legislators that you support these options for the pilot program. You know, I've had a lot of time to think about approval voting, and I understand I feel more comfortable with it. The important thing to note is even if you're, you know, still in the plurality camp, we want to keep things the way we are. These are just options. It'd be nice, you know, if there are some cities that are willing to be a little bit more exploratory and experimental, that we can have these different options to look at. We can't get the best if we're only looking at one thing by definition. That's a superlative word. So, and keep educating yourselves. The more you understand about this, as you see with the experts and people who have educated themselves on this information, they really gravitate towards the more accurate methods like approval voting rather than ranked choice for what we currently have. And I'd love it if you use me as a resource to go through this information. So please reach out with any questions that you have. So thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I think we'll start the reaching out right now. Does anybody have any questions regarding the approval voting? There was quite a bit of information there.
I just have a question. If you're, if you, David, are reaching out to your group, to those legislators, ours here is Representative Brady Brammer and Senator Mike Kennedy. I don't know if you've had a chance to work with them. I saw that Senator Bramble filed a ranked choice voting bill. So just wondering what your efforts are on that front.
Yeah, I've been, I've contacted Brady Brammer about this and had a few discussions and had a chance to explain this information very briefly. So he knows a little bit about it. I don't really know his feeling on this or not. I've reached out to Mike Kennedy, but not yet talked to him about these voting methods. But I have reached out to a number of legislators who are on the Government Operations Committee because they will have a chance to review this first. So I'm in discussion with a bunch of legislators.
Great. Anybody else with a question? It seems to me that we already use this type of voting when the ballot says to pick two out of however many. It's very similar voting, right? You know, especially for like our city council seats. So it's familiar in that sense. All you're talking about at this point is voting for as many as you like for one seat as opposed to multiple seats. So it does make sense. It's the concept is familiar. I don't have any questions myself. Anyone else? Okay. I see a lot of heads shaking. Thank you so much, David. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the next item on the agenda. It's the noticed items for the regular council meeting. Our noticed items are our work to appoint a new mayor. I don't know if there's anything for us to really discuss about that. I guess we could review the format.
I don't know. I have a list of questions. I'm sure that there's a lot of overlap with what questions they're asking, and I could, you know, I'd be happy to just run through my list, or we can just wait.
And as you guys go through your questions, I can cross off my questions.
I'll hold off on them. Then Denise might get a little advantage.
I think that might get there.
Yeah. As I'm looking at you, I realize that. I'm like, okay, you'll hear them when everybody else does.
Yeah, now that might be the way to do it. Hey, I don't know. So I saw who Ben replied. David Jakeman sent his application in the form that the city provided and wanted everyone to look at that before the meeting, if that's possible. He previously sent in his application in a kind of a resume form. So it's in your email. If you want to look at it before the meeting, that might be helpful.
Yep. I saw that email. Looking at it now, a lot more information than was just on the resume.
Right.
I'm checking it too. I just wanted to say I like the format that Chandler sent us. I think it seems like it's going to be simple. I think that's going to work out well for everybody.
Okay. So 3-minute introductions, and then we'll go down and we'll ask questions and allow for a 2-minute response per candidate. And I'll do the best I can to run the timer.
Can we just rotate through the candidates who answers first and kind of have a list? And okay, yep.
Similar to a debate.
That's a great idea. I will make the list.
So you'll just call on that person when it's their turn to answer?
Yeah.
And hopefully after a few questions, they'll know the order, who goes next and stuff. I don't know. Or you can call it out.
I'll write it up on the whiteboard.
Make use of that whiteboard.
Yeah. I use it, I just clean it.
No.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to, any other questions or comments about the meeting we're about to have?
No, I move that we adjourn working session and resume with the council meeting at 7.
Okay, I've got a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
All right, I've got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. See you in 7 minutes on the other.